Yes, post-war Germany was sometimes segregated thus, which meant on this particular occasion that German businessman Heinz Nordhoff required special authorization to attend the meeting. But anyway, Nordhoff was an engineer. He had recently been put in charge of a plant in Wolfsburg. The factory itself had been bombed so effectively by the Allies that even now, manufacture could proceed only on days when it did not rain. Nordhoff believed in his product, but he realized that the company would most likely perish if not procured by a larger company, preferably an American company, and that's why this meeting had been scheduled, to unload the entire concern. On Nordhoff's side of the conference table that day was one Colonel C.R. Redcliffe, representing the British military government. On the other side, flanked by subordinate executives, sat Ernest Breech, chairman of the board of the American company, the one that Nordhoff had been courting. What was the deal, Breech wanted to know. Nordhoff tugged at his collar. The deal was the choicest imaginable, he replied. He was prepared to give his company, to give it away to the Americans, gratis, outright, all of it, free. The American subordinates grinned like hungry hyenas. The only thing left now, they thought, was for their boss to swallow this wounded wildebeest whole. But Chairman Breech was not smiling. Quote, I do not think what we're being offered here is worth a damn, he said at last. I preserved his language precisely because it remains among the most famous quotes in the history of American industry. I do not think what we're being offered here is worth a damn. Well, promptly following its pronouncement, Heinz Nordhoff rose from the conference table and walked away. The months and years to come were dicey ones for his company. The Soviets offered to take it over and would have, except their demand for more West German land as part of the bargain was flat out rejected. And then late in 1949, Nordhoff attempted to market his product directly to the United States and traveled there personally, armed with facts and figures and photographs, and he met with, as he put it, utter failure. How extraordinary that such a promise could have been so thoroughly overlooked. For the American manufacturer sitting across the conference table in that Allies-only hotel in Cologne, March 1948, was the Ford Motor Company. In fact, present at that meeting was none other than Henry Ford II, the grandson of the American industrialist whose aim was to make automobiles accessible to everybody. And the company nobody wanted, the car that Ford turned down, the bug-shaped little what's-it, which perhaps more than any other auto anywhere grows on you, the one that he was offered free, that's right, the product that Ford's chairman of the board once declared worthless was the Volkswagen. And one thing more, among the reasons that the Ford Motor Company turned its back on the Beetle so quickly, among the reasons was its eagerness to create and promote a people's car of its own, one perfectly suited to the tastes of the American motorist, a sure-fire success, Ford was so certain. And thus employing the burgeoning science of market research was born the Edsel, which you remember as the most spectacular flop in automotive history. Only now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Again, happy Passover coming up and happy Easter. Is it happy Easter or... It's Happy Easter,
happy
right?
Happy Easter.
Happy
yep.
Easter. Is that work?
Yep.
Okay, great.
You're invited to Sunrise Service out of Chapel Hill in Shandon.
That would be interesting if I could get... I probably be up. So
6 o'clock in the morning.
All right.
Yeah, the Clark family out there, cowboy breakfast.
I might do that.
I like that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to talk to you about that before you leave.
Fantastic.
So, all right. So, and who are we talking to today? What the heck? Well, obviously we're talking to John Pishog, District 1 County Supervisor for San Luis Obispo County, and we also are pleased to have Melissa James, for President and CEO of Reach of the Central Coast, for her first appearance here. And we're talking about, and maybe her last, she may not like it after today. We're talking about meaningful private sector economic development in the Central Coast and balancing economic development in rural communities. And then with John, later in the show, we're going to be talking to him about the county budget, how the realities of our fiscal situation in California and the country is going to shape up here in San Luis Obispo County, and then a number of different items that always come up on PWM. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So Melissa, this came up last week. I had Joel Peterson from the Wine Alliance here, and of course we got a call from somebody. I'm sure he's listening now. You know him well, John, about, you know, the balance of, you know, growth and industry and even tourism, okay, which is a big deal for this county, right? And the impact it has on people. I mean, candidly, like myself, for instance, who moved here, you know, about 30 years ago because I wanted to get out of Los Angeles. And it's getting to be really congested and crowded, and, you know, traffic is an issue. So how does Reach, you know, cope with that, you know, wanting to bring growth and private sector growth to the locals without the local area without impeding on those of us who kind of like the quiet, peaceful life?
Yeah, it's such an important conversation and question. You know, I would say that in our region, so obviously reaches the two counties. That's 15 different cities in two counties that have leaders, council. Members, mayors that are making decisions on any given Tuesday about what the future of their city is. So a lot of it is around how do you bring all the important perspectives together to then be able to chart out what it is that you want and need. So you can't really, at a regional level, force that down. All politics, all land use is local.
Right.
Those decisions are happening on a local level. But one thing I know is true, universally throughout the region, there is a strong desire to see the next generation have the opportunity to live and work and raise a family here.
Right.
That is, you know, an issue across county lines, across political aisles. Everyone feels that way. So we did a public opinion poll, and in that, 9 out of every 10 working adults said they don't believe young people are going to be able to live and work here. And then if you look at the data of kind of the population and our public K-12 schools, 1 out of every 2 students is on a free and reduced lunch, which basically means that a family of 4 is living with a household income of less than $45,000 a year. So just think about the economic conditions that many people are living
in. How do they live in this county on that?
That is an excellent question. How do they? So what we're really focused on is how do we create more economic opportunity? How do we create good paying jobs and for young people, residents in our community to be able to step into that? How do we create those career pathways for them? So if you're in a local community, Paso Robles, Atascadero, a city, every city is grappling with that. How much housing do we need? What are the jobs and industries that we want to see in our community? Where should they be put? How many houses and what development? You know, the devil gets into the details, but what I would say is, if we want young people to be able to live and work here, if we want to have good health care, to have doctors and nurses that are taking care of us, we have to grapple with where they're going to live and how these businesses are going to be able to grow and expand. So there's trade-offs in those conversations, and we all have to be a part of that.
And I want to ask about John in a second, but, you know, one of the things that I have Edward Ring from the California Policy Center on the show, probably quarterly. He's a great guy. And he talks about creating abundance, abundant energy, abundant water, and that we have all these resources available to us, but it gets back to the scarcity crowd. that for some reason feels like it's better to, it's a NIMBY thing, you know, we want it. This is ours now. We're here. We don't want to let anybody else in.
I look at it too. A lot of times as the people say to me, oh, just ride your bicycle. You know, stop driving if you're going to be worried about the mileage tax. Well, it doesn't work, especially when you have, you know, we have retirees in this county. We have, I think, the highest population.
Sorry.
That's okay. We have the highest population of 80-plus-year-olds of any place in the state, you know, and then we have lots of young people. They're not sticking around. You know, they're going out to, they're moving to other states. We've lost, you know, population throughout the state. We're probably going to lose 2 or 3 more congressional representatives in the next census because of the flight, right? And and as you said earlier, you know, a lot of the income is gone. So
sorry, folks.
That's okay.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question for our guests?
Hi, Barry. This is Rebecca Kozak.
Hey.
I've been enjoying the program. I was hoping that Melissa could talk a little bit more about the STEM boxes that they provide for elementary schools.
Okay. That was on the topic list. So, yes, we will get to that.
Okay, perfect.
All right. Thanks
perfect.
So much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right.
So, John, one last question on this balancing act. Do you think the county and the municipalities are doing a very good job of what Melissa was talking about, of getting input from everybody and trying to work out the differences, or do you think that's not happening?
No, I think they're learning. And the economic downturn that this state has felt is actually forcing people to really confront some things. You know, that have been ignored for a long time. I will tell you one of the things that I think the counties are doing, and it's something that through the Rural County Representatives of California and the Golden State Connect Authority, we're connecting a lot of these rural counties to high speed internet.
Okay.
You know, into fiber to be able to get these, you know, children, you know, trained up so they can actually learn how to do some of the jobs of the future locally, not just having to leave their community and go to someplace, but being able to do that and speed up internet connection.
Yeah.
And so, you know, things like that, you know, there are small steps like that that are being taken. But once again, it's all overshadowed by the fact that, you know, that we're running out of state money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to talk about our county budget here in a little bit. You know, and then you've got the federal budget deficit. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And I think it's directly affecting California.
Yeah, and interestingly, I don't want to get off on this topic, but I think this rural internet interconnectivity is really important because, you know, I'm on the health, on the long-term care insurance side of the world.
Yes.
And there's a lot of initiatives now that, you know, folks that are older that need care in rural communities are going to have to be connected to really high-speed internet so they can do remote monitoring and all those types of mm-hmm. things, because that's what's coming, because we have a shortage of caregivers.
Well, it will also cut costs, right?
Right.
It'll cut costs and be able to, people can afford medical care.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's go to Rebecca's question, and you know, so, and this was actually our next topic. I want you to talk about your major initiatives, and the first one on the list is the talent pool, creating mm-hmm. a talent mm-hmm. pool. And I'm sure that has to do with the STEM boxes
mm-hmm.
that Rebecca was referring to. So, mm-hmm. see, Rebecca, I knew you were going to call and ask that question. So why don't you unpack that for us?
Yeah, I can get to the STEM boxes. I'll maybe map it up a little bit broader. So creating a talent pipeline, creating opportunities for young people to get the skills, education, training that they need to step into these jobs is a really important part of what is going to create economic opportunity for people. So, of course, this is working with K-12, community college, is higher education, it's apprenticeships, it's boot camps, it's all different ways that you can get the skills and training. So one of the things that we have been able to do, and Supervisor Prashant kind of highlighted it earlier, was one of our initiatives is called Uplift. And that is an initiative that we're looking at the 6-county region from Ventura to Santa Cruz. We're working in partnership with the state of California for what they call their California Jobs First initiative. Through that, we've been able to secure $19 million in funding. And within that funding, we've been able to put out money into 42 different projects in our community that are doing workforce development, kind of the economic mobility type initiatives. One of those projects is, I think, what Rebecca was referring to, that the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation has put together a program. They have several, but one of them is iInnovate, which is basically creating opportunities for young people to, kind of from the K-6 standpoint, to be able to go into these makerspace labs. But not every campus has these makerspace labs. So one of the things that they've done is they've created these STEM boxes that create the ability for kids to innovate, tinker, learn about different types of industries and opportunities through these boxes that have, they've been sent home with kids. They're in classroom kind of environments.
So what kind of stuff's in the boxes?
Oh gosh, you're gonna test me. It will be anything from, like, there may be a robotics lesson, and it's almost like a science project. There will be rubber bands and straws and, you know, different kinds of things, and they will be trying to create some
That's what we used to use Erector sets and Lincoln Logs for, right?
Exactly, to become an engineer.
Absolutely.
But it's trying to create a learning environment. Not all kids... not all humans, actually. The best way to learn is by reading.
Right.
Some people learn by doing, by experimenting. Some people learn audibly. And it's creating these different types of opportunities to learn and tinker. And another kind of component of this program that they're leading at the foundation that we've been able to put some funding into is creating career exposure in the industries that are growing in the community. So anything from ag tech to energy to aviation to aerospace to technology to healthcare, they have gone out and they have created these videos of real people in our community that have certain jobs that kids, you know, a lot of kids, they only know the jobs that they see, which is like a doctor and a teacher, because they either go to the doctor's office or they go to school.
Yeah.
This is creating opportunities for kids to see, well, what does it mean? Not just to be a doctor, but maybe a technician.
Right.
What does it mean to be someone who's working on rockets at Vandenberg? And so these kids are getting opportunities to see these careers, see themselves in it, and then be able to do lessons that are kind of aligned with the industries that are growing in our region.
Well, let's talk about aerospace next, because you know, our friend, I know you mentioned a couple of things when we talked last week, but our friend Adam Verdin, who's a pilot.
Yes.
And I know he's been very active at down in the South County getting kids involved in aerospace at the Napomo Airport, I believe.
Oceano
Airport. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you see coming. I mean, I'm excited about the space port up here. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to get them on the radio here, but if you're listening. And but yeah, I mean, I think that's really exciting for our area.
Oh, it absolutely is. Honestly, all of the airports and some that are kind of the airfields are incredible assets that we have in our community. So everything from Vandenberg Space Force Base to the Oceano Airport to the San Luis Obispo Airport to the Santa Margarita Airfield to the Paso Robles Airport all have new innovative ideas that are happening now, not just on a paper. So in Oceano, you know, they are looking at aviation kind of technician opportunities for kids in the Lucia Mar School District to be learning about these opportunities. At the San Luis Obispo Airport, there's a partnership with Cal Poly and Cuesta to start to kind of look at building a new training center that would have both kids that are, you know, in the aerospace engineering to young people that are going to be in the technicians in one space together.
Right.
And then at Santa Margarita, the Honda Research Institute is doing R&D
and
looking at interesting things there. And then up here to Paso, the spaceport opportunity, it's a big deal for our region. It's a big deal for the city. They have incredible partnerships in the city of Paso. They've been able to kind of align and get earmarked funding from the federal government. We at Reach were able to give them a small grant to do some of the feasibility and work to get to that place. They have partnerships with very interesting industry partners that are out there doing testing now that want to do more out there. Once they secure their license with the FAA, there's, you know, even partners like NASA. that want to come out there. So just think about what that means for residents in Paso, that kids out of Paso High might be able to step in and work with these amazing aerospace companies right in their backyard.
Well, and again, I mean, I know we're running out of time for you with you, but I know that the people are coming into the county doing a lot of work, especially in the health field, and they're basically guns for hire. They're temporary employees for the services that provide employees for the various different labs and services. Those jobs could be held by full-time people here in the county if we had the right workforce. Talk about ag tech, because ag is so important in this county. Let's wrap up on ag tech.
Yeah, so ag is a legacy industry.
Right.
It will always be an anchor of the Central Coast. And I think of ag tech, you know, there's a company, I'll just highlight one, which would also kind of align with entrepreneurship as well. So Trick Robotics is a company that is in the ag tech space, and they came out of Cal Poly Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, where that is a place where community partners and students at Cal Poly are coming together, coming up with interesting company ideas, and they are building companies from in downtown San Luis Obispo. It's a partnership that the county invests funding into. But that is one example of an ag tech company that has started up here.
How's that working out, John?
I actually think a lot of these companies up here are actually doing really cutting edge, technology. It's amazing. First off, it's filled with really, really smart people.
Right.
And it's always amazing to listen to them. I've been to a number of presentations where the ad tech firms have talked about, the ideas. And I've seen some of it in action in the Salinas Valley up through a number of the growers up there. Just incredible things that they're doing. And to me, this goes to what I look at county government, what we're able to actually get done. We joined with ACI Jet and Cuesta College to do the airplane maintenance facility down there at the San Luis Obispo Airport. We've trained a ton of new airplane mechanics and people that are in that industry. Those are not jobs that can be taken over by AI,
right?
To be able to do that. And to me, those are the types of things that keep these kids at home, keep these kids
That's
here in the
great.
Community. They're able to raise a family and do the things that they want to do as they get older and a career that expands for them. So to me, anything that puts more people on the ground like that is a good thing.
Well, I hear the bumper music. So, Melissa, I know you got to go. And
thank you for having me.
Thank you. And hopefully you'll come back and visit with me in the audience again.
I'd love to.
Without Grandpa here. So. All right, folks. We'll be back on the other side of the break with John Pishog, District 1 Supervisor. So stay tuned.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News. I'm Deborah Valentine. Over 4 weeks into Operation Epic Fury, as Fox's Jonathan Hunt reports, U.S. and Israel continue to strike Iranian targets.
We recently destroyed another one of their command bunkers. Leaders forced to flee. No water, no power, no oxygen, no command and control. Their faith in their caves diminishing.
War Secretary Pete Hegseth, their optimism surrounding potential peace talks with Iran are fueling today's stock market rally, the Dow up over 900 points. NASA's long-delayed Artemis II mission is set to blast off tomorrow from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Mark Berger is the launch weather officer.
Even if we have showers around, we have a two-hour launch window, we should be able to shoot the gap between those showers, and none of these look particularly vigorous.
Four astronauts will fly around the moon and back as part of the mission. America's listening to Fox News.
Junior, you know why my TV is turned down so low? Last week, I went down to see Peter Lussier at Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast. He's a nice young feller who tested my hearing. He had me try on these nearly invisible hearing aids. See? They ain't got no buttons or nothing. By gum, I hear like I'm 29 years old. Call Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists. Dial 805-460-7385. Or use your smartphone and go to SlowCountyHearingAids.com.
Uh-oh. Did we lost something here? Folks, I think we might be on the air. We'll see how this goes. I believe we're on the air. So welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with now with John Pichon, District 1 County Supervisor. We hope we've got a few more topics we want to touch on with him, county related. And let me just start. Excuse me, John. You know, when we were here last time, we were discussing the county management reorg that was happening.
Yes,
and also the KPMG audits. How's that going? How are you seeing that changing things, especially as you go into this new round of budget stuff?
Well, last year we had a $32 million a budget deficit that we were able to close, and I want to just preface this right now with that there is a state law that says we must have a balanced budget by July 1. So everybody should know that, you know, knowing that, yes, you're going to hear these figures, $32 million. We used a number of techniques to be able to close that budget, and we did close down some vacant positions within the county government. We had roughly about about 2,900. I think we're down to 2,600 right now, close to that, in San Luis Obispo County government. We had 27 departments. I think we have 26 departments now. 700 programs that the county runs. A lot of those are mandated by the state with money from the state. And it's everything from homeless programs to mental health programs to agricultural programs that you see the county do. And I do think, though, that the audits that we've been doing, KPMG's been doing audits in different departments, and they've worked exceptionally well. They've found ways to save money, to be able to, if there's some waste, they've been able to identify that so we can take corrective action and deal with that. And so I think we're actually becoming a little bit leaner as a county government, a little bit more focused county government, and I think it's been good. Where we are sitting right now, the numbers that have come out say that it's about $1 million budget deficit right now. We should be able to close that pretty quickly and be able to do this. We don't need to expand government. You know, I've always, and certainly not expand government based on tax increases. I've always voted no against any tax increase that's come before the board. And I do believe we'll be able to close that and continue to offer the services that are mandated and we need to do for the community.
So again, I mean, you know, so a lot of the mandated services are paid for by state and or federal money.
Yes.
And so if that money disappears, I mean, what is the obligation to continue the program?
That's a great question, because a lot of times we get obligated to do it. The state says you must do this, right? Mm. You must, you know, and the example would be in-home supportive services, IHSS.
Right.
IHSS is a good program for people that you know, that can't afford and they can't leave their homes, and they have somebody check on them, bring them food, be able to take them to a doctor's appointment, whatever it would be. And it's, you know, sometimes it's a family member, and they get paid. They get paid to do that service, and the state is the one that wanted us to set it up, and the state continues to fund it. And every year they say, we're going to cut back. And so you need to cut back the program, or better yet, you need to actually come up with the money to be able to take care of it locally, which means they want us to raise taxes.
Right.
So far, we haven't had to raise taxes. We haven't even approached people to raise taxes. As I said earlier, I've stood against these tax increases, because I do believe when you have a little bit over $1 billion budget, 280,000 people in the county, I think we should be able to figure out how to do it. If we have 700 programs, no one can tell me that all 700 programs are working.
Right.
So, you know, just the way it is. So, you know, if you want me to pick, I'm not in the board majority right now, but if you let me pick, I can certainly help you save some money.
Well, hopefully that'll be the case next year. So
yeah, I hope so too, because I think we can make some good strides. And I think We've also made some good strides. You know, we reorganized the county government to an executive office instead of an administrative office. And so, you know, we're making some good strides there to be able to get people focused on the job at hand, what's important to people. You know, the things that were important 10 years ago are not always important now. And so we need to reevaluate, you know, how we can take care of the people in the community like we're supposed to and offer those services. But make sure that we never, ever, ever cut public safety, because public safety is to me is always is number one.
So, you know, again, the news in the story, the news out there today is all these, you know, the not just waste, fraud and abuse, but mostly fraud in the Medi-Cal program.
Right.
You had and also these hospice programs.
Yes.
I mean, do you have any?
And your daycares?
And your daycares. Yeah, I mean, you know, the Learing Centers, right?
Right. The Learing Centers. it's there. I mean, people have abused the system, and they have. We know that. And so, you know, we need to be able to rein this in and really do audits on this. Look at the fact of the money that was spent by the state of California in all 58 counties for homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just 5 years ago. It was the number one issue for Governor Newsom.
Right.
And we can't even tell you where the money went. That's, you know, now we have great, I believe, we have great local, you know, people that help with the homeless crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but to me, you know, everybody needs, we do, we just need to audit these folks. We need to make sure that everything's going well. I think there are organizations that are doing it the right way. They're actually, you know, making sure people get off the street and get into permanent housing. They're getting them back on their feet. If they're addicted or they're having a mental health crisis, they're getting the information that they need.
Yep. Well, again, you'd think this would be a small enough county to be able to identify people that are taking advantage, you know, organizations that are taking advantage of the system.
And just think about Los Angeles County with 11 million people.
Right.
How does five supervisors get their arms around that?
Uh-huh.
I haven't yet figured out. Maybe because they have a staff of 30 each, right?
You know, well,
so 30 people or
right.
something. But I still think that it's a tough one. But we also have to rely on our partners in the state legislature and the governor's office to do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's people taking advantage of the situation. So as Ronald Reagan used to say, trust them, but verify.
Right. Right. I think that was the Russians, but that's on
it. It was the Soviets, actually,
the Soviets,
not the Russians.
Yes,
the Soviets, which are an interesting, I only had one encounter with them, and they were very interesting people.
I'll bet. So there was an article, there was an interesting article to me in the Wall Street Journal, and I sent it to you, and it kind of goes along with something we didn't talk to Melissa about, but, you know, the state of California is just throwing away tax revenue by making this such a hostile environment for productive people. Okay, the article in the Wall Street Journal, of course, was that almost $12 trillion of income has left the state for income tax purposes,
mm-hmm.
because they've left. So that, mm-hmm. you know, even if they were paying 10%, you know, which is probably what they would be paying on that kind of income, that's $1.2 trillion. And the same thing's happening, you know, it's in my opinion, and I don't want to say this with Melissa here, I think it's great that Sable Oil has reopened in the Santa Barbara channel.
And it's pumping.
And that's more tax revenue.
And that oil is going down, hopefully to lower the cost of gasoline, but it's going down to Los Angeles to be refined. And it also means that there are less ships from the Middle East coming in, you know, or from Russia or from, you know, Venezuela,
right.
you know, with their oil and big ships and cargo ships into our ports, which is great. We can expand oil production in California and be able to lower the price if we do it, because California is not connected to a pipeline across the country. It's connected to the pipelines that come in off ships. And now you'll have, at one point you had over 30 refineries in California. You now have 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, right there, you know, we're not being able to feed the need. And as I said earlier, this is all about an energy transition.
Yep.
And so you can't just cut one giant energy source off when you're in the middle of a transition.
Absolutely. All right. So let's talk a little bit about some local issues. Thankfully, it looks like the Templeton Roundabout at the corner of Vineyard and Bethel.
The temporary roundabout.
The temporary roundabout And I was amused by the one comment I saw from Bruce Gibson that, well, people don't like roundabouts when they hear about them, but afterwards they like them. And I would suggest that we put one on his street.
Well, hence, you'd have to take a lot of people's property in eminent domain to get it on that street down there in Cayucas. But I do think you know, the state came up with this idea of a temporary roundabout.
Right.
And so we're going to put this in and not take anybody's property, and so then everybody's going to get used to it, and then you're going to be able to come back and say, see, you all love it now, so now we're going to take everybody's front yards and put in a roundabout. And it's just, there's not enough room in this location.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not enough room for this roundabout. It's, you know, I spent a lot of time in Scotland because my daughter went to college over there. And driving around, and some of those roundabouts, the circle in the middle is like 3 feet.
Well, and it goes the wrong way there too.
Yeah, makes you go around the other way, right? I have to remind myself, go to the left, right? Go to the left. But it's just not going to work because once again, in a year or so, they're going to come back and say, well, now we're putting in the permanent one, and we have to start eminent domain proceedings. And these are people's front yards.
Yeah.
One of them has a swing set that would have to be removed.
You're
displacing a child's, you know, swing set because you want to put a roundabout in. So there's got to be other ways to do this and make this so the traffic moves. One gentleman who came and spoke did a great job. He actually sat out there. He's an engineer, and he timed it, and he realized that you were actually, if you were in line to go through the stop sign, it gave you an extra 3 minutes of time. So 3 minutes, you know, spending $3 million is probably not a good thing.
Well, aren't there any other solutions other than, you know, a four-way stop or a roundabout that would take people's property?
Certainly, you could do a stoplight and timing it in the mornings because it happens at two times of the day.
Right.
Yeah, you could. There's all kinds of traffic, you know, traffic calming situations.
An overpass, maybe.
Yeah, no. Yeah. You know, I think about that.
Don't tell Bruce Gibson.
There's an overpass that, you know, we wanted to do a connector between the bike path in Atascadero and the bike path in Templeton. The Templeton-Atascadero connector. And so everybody's been talking about this way before I was even on. And then the price tag came in. It was over $30 million because they have to do an overpass over the Union Pacific Railway. At what point do you say, no, this is just too expensive? We can't do this. We can't afford it. And so it's on hold.
Oh gosh, yeah. Thankfully. Yeah. All right. And then I understand somebody has proposed a gas station in Templeton at Vineyard and the 101. And that's another thing that people's hair are on fire.
Well, I didn't really know anything about it because there's been a plan submitted, but the plan is not complete. And so they've got to go out and do a bunch of studies and reports, and then it will be complete, and then it would go, you know, through the planning stages at the planning and building department, and then it would go to that particular location, then it would go to the planning commission. So it's years off because they're waiting for the plan to get completed, and it's not completed right now. So I don't know anything about it. I haven't seen the plans. I haven't seen their ideas of what they want to do there. It's the rumor. People approach me about it all the time. And I don't know yet because they haven't completed what it's supposed to even look like.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll just keep an eye on that one. Well, let's talk, the last topic I have here. Well, actually I have two more topics if we have time, the SLOCOG sales tax efforts and what's going on with that. And one of the things you said earlier, which is an issue that, I talked to Greg Haskett about from CoLab the last time. It's like, okay, this SLOCOG, what is it, half cent sales tax
was tried 10 years ago and it failed.
And it would raise about $35 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my thought was, because you just said it earlier, it's like in a billion-dollar budget, you should be able to find enough to make up for some of these losses. Well, between the county and the municipalities and the other taxing organizations, you'd think that's probably $2 billion. You'd think that they could come up with $24 million, was it $35 million a year out of all those budgets without imposing another tax on us.
Well, and I think, you know, as we said, so this is, you know, they've been trying to do this for a long time.
Right.
So the state sets up a program, and they want to entice counties to pass their own local, they have a fund. So they want you to match dollar for dollar on to be able to qualify for some of these, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is they use the sales tax mechanism,
right,
which disproportionately, I believe, hurts people in lower income brackets. They have to pay more.
Yeah, it's regressive.
It's not right.
Yeah.
And so it failed because it needed a 2/3 10 years ago.
Right.
And there wasn't even a campaign against it, and it failed. It just kind of fell apart. But this time, they're doing it two-track. They're going to do, once again, Slow Cog, which I voted against it every time they bring it up. Slow Cog wants to put it on the ballot. That means it would be a 2/3 vote. Now, if they go out and they gather enough signatures, I think it's like 8,000 signatures,
right,
then they can actually get it at a 50% plus one kind of deal. So right now, if your approach for signature for a tax increase for roads, and they call it the self-help county. You're going to be
right.
A self-help county. You're going to tax your own folks. We're going to match it, and then you'll be able to fix all these roads. I will tell you the real solution here, and this is something that Debbie Arnold came up with when I was on the board. It's when we took over the board 10 years ago, we were able to get a priority of roads first. And so we were able to fix public safety was first, roads was second. And that would allow us to be able to fix the roads and get them back up. And we did a lot of roads. We fixed a lot of roads. The roads department was hustling all the time, working it, making it work. Well, they lowered that off of the priority level 3 years ago.
Huh.
So the roads are not doing as well as they should be, because I think, never let a good emergency go to waste, right?
Right.
So they're gonna make the case that the roads are so terrible, you got to raise your own sales tax. And to me, I think that's not right.
Yeah, so I noticed there was somebody in the Trader Joe's parking lot yesterday collecting signatures. So that do we know how they're doing on collecting these signatures?
Oh, I have not heard, no.
Yeah, I heard they were like halfway there or something.
Yeah.
And the deadline's coming up.
It is. It's coming up. I don't know the exact date, but it's coming up. They have a certain amount of time to do it. This would be on the November election,
right?
Not the June election. And we'll see, because turnout will be bigger, and I think they think that there's more people will be to be able to turn out that will be able to, vote a certain way, vote for a governor that they want and be able to get the tax increase in.
So, folks, I'm just going to say, don't sign a petition unless you know what you're really signing. You know, they always sound good, and there's a lot of pressure at these little kiosks that the stores are forced to set up.
Yeah.
Allow them to be set up, and I just walk by them. But, again, be careful what you sign.
I always talk to them because I want to know, first off, how much they're getting paid, because they're usually getting, $5 to $10 a signature.
Really?
So you make, a pretty good living.
Yeah. All right. Finally, there was some sort of big thing that happened about, the San Luis Port Harbor District,
mm-hmm,
at the Board of Supervisors. And when I saw that, I was kind of hoping that that was going to kill off all this, offshore, wind development stuff. But I was disabused of that thought. But what really happened there with that issue?
Well, I believe it was a preemptive move to kind of help out, help the district there by, making it a countywide effort.
Okay.
I think it's actually, it's all about fundraising or money, and taxes and revenue and revenue sources to be able to, and everybody down there was saying that we all use the Harbor District, so should we be taxed, for it. And they do a good job. They're not a bad group of people, but quite frankly, they have lines where their jurisdiction is, and that's the case. So to me, it didn't make much sense that it was actually going to take over the whole county. I do think from the perspective of taxation, and this kind of goes to what they were doing and all the other municipalities. They're all looking. Most of the municipalities have signed off on the self-help county tax increase, so they all want to be able to share in some of that money,
right,
and be able to get it because it fills a need. And then these municipalities have their own tax increases,
right,
which you've seen. So once again, you're just adding tax upon tax upon tax, and it's making it. And I know everybody says, oh, it's less than one cup of Starbucks coffee a month,
right?
I got that, but there's a lot of people that don't drink Starbucks coffee because they can't afford it.
Well,
I mean, yeah. we're in it's a tough time right now.
And you got school bonds.
Yes, school bonds. And you've got, just think about all the things that are on the ballot, all the different ways to spend money. And to raise your own taxes?
It's death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's easy for me. And it's easy for me because I don't support tax increases.
Right.
So I just say no.
All right. Well, when we return on the other side of the break, we're going to turn to our favorite subject, politics.
Love it.
All right, folks, we'll be back in about 2 minutes, so stand by.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. The major averages ending the last trading day of the month and quarter sharply higher. Stocks surging following an unconfirmed news report that the Iranian president is open to ending the war as long as certain requirements are met. The Middle East conflict has triggered the worst quarter for stocks in nearly 4 years. Big tech and industrials were among the best performers in the S&P 511 sectors. The magnificent seven big cap tech stocks were higher across the board, but closing out a dismal month with the Mag 7 members down about 6% on average. Oil prices fell with U.S. crude around $102 a barrel. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Microsoft, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow decliners, Chevron, Verizon, and Travelers. The Dow rising 1,125 points. The Nasdaq higher by 796. S&P 500 up 185. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location, Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more, call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online. DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block offices. When tax laws change, confidence matters. With the Big Beautiful Bill bringing new deductions, credits, and rules, your locally owned and operated H&R Block is here to help you make sense of it all. Our trusted tax pros stay up to date on the latest changes so you don't have to. H&R Block helps you get every dollar you deserve, fast, accurate, and stress-free. This tax season, trust H&R Block to help you navigate the Big Beautiful Bill with confidence. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment and get your taxes done right.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with John Pichong, San Luis Obispo County District 1 Supervisor. You can call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So next week's show, I'm going to have, for the first time, and I'm really excited about this, Reverend Frank Triggs on the show to talk about various things that he's thinking about in the religious realm these days. And I had a nice chat with him, and I'm looking forward to that. And then another really interesting guest, Sarah Forsyth, MD. She is a regenerative education consultant, and she focuses on the value of regenerative health. So instead of taking all these drugs that, you know, just to feel good, you know, it's all about doing other things to really fix the core components of your body. So I'm looking forward to having that as well. Kind of a real Maha topic, you know?
Outstanding.
Yeah,
it's going to be very good.
All right. So let's start here. John, you know, I don't think that most folks really get the huge impact that the jungle primary system in California has on the Republican Party. That we got a caller. We were just saying we hadn't gotten any callers. Welcome, other than Rebecca, but welcome to Protecting What Matters. What's your question for John?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh, you know, we were just talking about you.
Hi,
you
Cody.
Yes, I heard. You must have heard us.
Yes, I was out at the time, and now I'm home next to my...
Real quick, Cody, what's going on?
I have one question. John, when are you going to require the city of Paso Robles, before they get 502 new building permits, to hook up to the Nacimiento pipeline to provide the water for those additional houses?
Good question, Cody. Thanks for calling.
Bye for now.
So repeat the question, Barry.
Something about hooking up a bunch of houses to the Nacimiento pipeline.
Okay, so I don't know that much about it. Obviously, that the city of Paso Robles believes that they have enough water to be able to hook up those homes to the pipe, to the water from the pipeline. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to look into it, but I appreciate Cody bringing that up.
Yeah, you should send it an email to John or something.
No, Cody, I'll get back to you on this one.
All right, cool. So talk about the jungle primary. I mean, I remember when it was introduced. I thought it was a bad idea. But the lobbyists who were working for my PAC at the time said, oh, this is going to make it much better for the GOP because it'll bring us more moderate candidates. But generally speaking, that's not, I guess, between all the redistricting the Burton family did and the jungle primaries, we don't really get much of a choice of candidates.
No, it's two Democrats mostly, right?
You know, right.
So they're the top two vote getters, and then they battle it out. And Republicans have been excluded. And as you know, Prop 50 passed, and so that cut the number of congressionals back. You know, mm-hmm. same thing with the Assembly and the Senate. I remember in 1994 is the last time we had the control of the state assembly. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're talking about 30, you know, over 30 years ago.
Has it been that long?
It has been, yep. Speaker Kurt Pringle was the Republican speaker from Garden Grove, California.
Right.
And it was tough. It actually took... Willie Brown was the speaker that got ousted, and he played games for a while, and so they had to do two recalls to be able to get some Republicans that went with the Dems to be able to become speaker, including Doris Atwood. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been a failed experiment. I don't like it. I don't think it has, you know, brought a diversity of opinion forward, and I like to be able to see the debates when you have two different people and two different worldviews and what they want to get accomplished.
Yeah.
I want to know what they want to get accomplished. Let them talk about it.
So again, I mean, now, of course, the Democrats, their hair is on fire because two Republicans are leading the governors in the polls and the governor. What's your thought on that race, the governor? And that's June 6th, right? Is it June 6th or June 4th?
June 2nd.
June 2nd, so it's a little early. And again, I mean, do you think we're going to have any down ballot wins here? I mean, you know, we've got some good candidates. You know, Stacey, you know, is running for the insurance commissioner, and she seems to be really doing her work
from
out
San
there.
Luis Obispo County.
And you got, what is his name, Wagner down in Orange County?
Don Wagner for Secretary of State.
Right. So what are your...
Supervisor Don Wagner?
Right. Yeah. He was on the show last year.
Outstanding.
He's great. But yeah, I mean, any predictions or any thoughts on how this is going to play out?
Well, I think it's going to get turned nasty, and it's not going to be necessarily the two Republicans going after each other. It's going to be the third and fourth Democrat down the line who's just going to spend all their money just tearing them down, trying to get people not to vote. So it's very important. Remember, negative advertising doesn't get you to vote for somebody else. It gets you not to vote at all.
Right.
So make sure you vote. These votes are very, very important. We need to make sure that you get out there and you vote.
What was I going to ask? God, I just lost my train of thought on that one. Any ballot initiatives that we should be watching out for? That's probably more general election stuff, right?
It is general election stuff, and they are still negotiating these in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect that a number of them have qualified. They have enough signatures, but there's also going to be a lot of horse trading in Sacramento to keep some on, put some off. And so we have to really wait, maybe do another show here after the primary election to get into what's going to be on the ballot.
So that's what I was going to ask you. There was a headline about the FBI planning to release information on Eric Swalwell.
I saw that on
his relationship with Fang Fang. What do you think? And then he's threatening to sue.
Yeah, I think he's threatening to sue because he's embarrassed of what's in there. So
right.
And the only person that helps releasing that is probably Katie Porter comes up. you know, because, you know, it's going to be one of those kind of just, you know, Me Too moments, and then it's going to be, you know, he's going to fall to the wayside. Well, so we'll see.
So is there anything else you're watching? We got like 10 seconds left. Anything else you're watching on the state level?
I'm just the state party Republican convention is coming up the week after Easter, and we'll know who's endorsed by the Republican Party.
That'll be great. Well, John, thanks for coming in, and actually thank you for bringing Melissa into the mix.
Thank you for
having us. She was great, and it gives me some hope for the county. So there are good people thinking about these things.
Thank you for all you do to the dialogue in their community.
Well, thanks so much. Again, folks, have a great holiday week, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week with Frank Triggs and Dr. Sarah Forsythe. So have a great week.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazingbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.